Here presenting to APHA and with this esteemed panel and talking about something that I'm really passionate about. Be talking about a project that we've done to prepare medical students to care for patients with autism. We weren't working on identifying, screening, or diagnosing autism. So if you were hoping for that, I'm sorry to disappoint you. We were more concerned about when a patient comes to see a medical professional physician, can they provide quality care to that patient beyond the diagnosis? I want to acknowledge my colleagues, especially the fabulous Nikki Johnson, who's here in the room, contributed a great deal to making this project possible and achieving the outcomes that I'm going to tell you about today. I also want to show my appreciation to HRSA for funding this project and allowing us to do this work, and state that we don't have any relationships or conflicts to disclose. So just a brief word about what autism spectrum disorder is. I know many of you in the room are familiar with this condition, and it is the media, the disability darling of the media, and so you've heard a lot about it and may have some misinformation about what it is and is not. So what autism, the defining characteristics of autism spectrum disorder, or just autism, it's a developmental disability, which means it occurs during the developmental period and lasts lifelong. There's two basic features of autism. There's significant impairment in social communication and social interaction, and restricted repetitive patterns of behavior, which means there may be really restricted interests in a very focused topic or subject. There may be repetitive movements or a real need for sameness or routine that's well beyond what we expect in the normative population. Autism occurs in about 1 in 68 children and is 5 times more common in boys than girls. I'll just go very quickly through what we know about the health of people, particularly adults with autism spectrum disorder, because it's very similar to what you've heard all day and yesterday about the health of people with disabilities. We know that adults with autism are more likely to have unhealthy weight, less likely to engage in physical activity, have diets that are lacking in fruits, vegetables, fiber, and protein, and have inadequate emotional support. There's also a higher incidence of epilepsy and mental illness, and poorer health-related quality of life. When you understand or think a little bit about what autism is, what the core features of autism are, it helps you understand what some of the barriers in a healthcare setting might be. We know that we have communication impairment, and so we can anticipate that there is going to be problems communicating effectively with a healthcare provider. Also, there's a high co-occurrence between autism and intellectual disability, and so we can anticipate that there's going to be comprehension problems on the part of the patient, and there's very often behavioral difficulties in people with autism related to communication or comprehension problems, or related to their need for sameness or other features of the condition. And so we find that the complex health problems evident in people with autism are complicated by the fact that they need extra time to complete the health interview and exam, to be sure that there's comprehension and adequate communication, etc. On the other hand, there's almost no training whatsoever. I mean, present company accepted at this table. There are isolated pockets of really excellent training throughout the country about autism and other disabilities, but there's no disability training that's required for physicians. It's entirely possible and likely that a medical student will go through all 4 years of undergraduate, get their MD, do their residency and fellowship in whatever subspecialty, and never have a lecture about disability and the health conditions affecting people with disability, never have a lecture about how to care the special accommodations or care needs of people with disabilities, and never see a patient that had a disability. And so it's not surprising that healthcare providers, when surveyed, report that they're really unprepared, uncomfortable, and overwhelmed at the prospect of treating patients with autism and other disabilities. Without training, we find that healthcare providers bring the same assumptions that the rest of the, and misperceptions that the rest of the community has about disability. They tend to underestimate the abilities of patients with disabilities. They grossly underestimate the patient's quality of life and minimize the patient's capacity to contribute to their own healthcare. They just make assumptions about who this person is and what they can do, and those assumptions really limit the quality of care that they can provide. The last bullet is specific to autism and other developmental disabilities, where the patients very often have a caregiver who's very involved in their day-to-day care, and the healthcare provider really, especially the adult care providers, really have no capacity to use those caregivers effectively in the interaction. This problem is recognized. Several other reports have been published on the need for training healthcare providers. The National Council on Disability said this absence of professional training is the most significant barrier to quality healthcare for people with disabilities. So what do we teach? You know, medical school is a lot of memorization. You learn a lot about the body, about health systems, about social determinants. There's a lot of things that medical students are expected to know and understand and remember on the spot. What we thought was, instead of learning about a lot of different disabilities and facts about disability, we really wanted to impart understanding that disability isn't the same as having poor health and doesn't necessarily predict or infer poor health. People with disabilities have the same basic health care needs as other people in terms of preventive care and routine medical care. And the importance of communicating effectively with patients and treating patients with respect. That's what we wanted to convey. Unfortunately, there's just a few things that we wanted to teach because we didn't have an entire curriculum like Kathy did. We just had an encounter, which is just a couple of hours. So how do you teach these things? Like I said before, a lot of medical school is about memorization. You know, students read a lot of textbooks and journal articles and memorize a lot of information. But there's also a need to teach students how to be physicians, how to adopt the values of the profession, and to comport themselves in the way of a good physician. And we call that professionalism. And the best ways to teach professionalism, not reading and memorizing, it comes down to role modeling, experiential learning, giving the students an experience with what you're trying to teach, and personal reflections are often used. You know, medical students are really, really busy, and you can give them an experience, teach them a lecture, or have them do a home visit, and then if they go right from there to the quiz or to the next thing they have to do and never have a moment to process what they learned or what that means, that learning often doesn't last. It doesn't really stick. And so for professionalism, they found that it's really important to have enforced time to reflect on what they learned and what the implications are. And so we call it's an essay. Oftentimes it's a written reflection, which is essentially an essay, but the point of it is to give the student an opportunity to think about what they learned and what it means. And so we conclude that we really need to have firsthand experience with people with disabilities if you want to impact the professionalism with respect to patients with disabilities. And so we need to have people with disabilities involved in medical education. And what we did, and Rosalind Jessling is here in the audience, she helped a lot with recruiting patients. We reached out to the disability community and said, we're worried about medical education and we want to teach students about caring for patients with disabilities. And we were overwhelmed by the response. We have 130 people representing all different ages and disability types and family members who really want to be part of the solution. And so at that point, we approached the med school, and we said we really want to include adults with autism and family members in teaching roles to teach students with, in medical school about having autism and being a family member of someone with autism. And our goal was really to help the students, as Kathy said, feel more comfortable providing care to kids and adults with autism. Our encounter was two main parts. We had some didactic instruction that all the students participated in, and what we wanted them to understand was a little bit about what autism is, the fact that there's no system of care to provide health care to people with autism. These people with autism are living in the community, and they find a healthcare provider the same way that anyone else does, and they can land on your schedule at any time, so it's important to be prepared and to know what to do about them. We also talked about medical home models and how effective that model of care can be for patients with complex conditions, and person-centered or family-centered care. So that's basically what we covered in didactics. And then the larger part of our encounter was a facilitated panel discussion. And so we brought in our adults with autism and family members of kids and adults with autism. And we had a developmental behavioral pediatrician kind of facilitate the conversation about the healthcare needs of people with autism. They had a number of different, you know, there was different questions that were posed, and whoever on the panel wanted to speak to that question, they had the opportunity. And so they often talked about the impact of autism on the family, or about learning about that diagnosis and trying to learn about the services and care needs. We talked a lot about acute health care needs and about kind of the best experience they had in healthcare and the worst experience, just to give them an opportunity to talk about what they really value in a healthcare experience, what they really would like to see from a physician. We also thought it prudent to talk to the medical school about the value of adding this component to their training and how it fits in to what they're trying to teach and what they're being told to teach to medical students. And so there's the liaison committee on medical education, which decides what needs to be taught in medical school and in graduate medicine. They don't have any goals around disability. That would have been an easy fit. But we thought that they do have goals about teaching to provide culturally competent care, to provide care to a diverse population, and to meeting the needs of an underserved population. And so we said we've got that. This curriculum meets those objectives, and so we kind of wrote objectives out that they could put into the curriculum for that that morning. And then we measured, we had just a couple of hours for this curriculum. We didn't have a pre and post test, but we did measure student satisfaction with the curriculum and changes, that they reported any change in their comfort, knowledge, and skills. We had 99 students participate, evenly split, about 50 male and 49 female. And this encounter was part of the ambulatory care rotation during the third year of medical school. So all third year medical students rotate through this rotation and had this encounter at some point during their third year. And then we had an online questionnaire, and I'm just going to present some of our findings from this simple Survey Monkey that they did, and you'll see that the red bars are positive or very positive change, and they range across items from 70 to 90% of the students reporting positive or very positive change. And we asked about change in knowledge about what to do or say, about an understanding of the needs of patients with autism, skills in how to care for patients with autism, confidence and comfort in their ability to care for patients with autism, and then the ability to communicate and provide good health care. I'm going to skip. We also had them do a reflection, as I mentioned, and we did a qualitative analysis of that, but I'll skip in the interest of time. We were interested, we felt that we had a pretty good response from the students. They reported a positive change, and they were satisfied with the training, and we were curious about whether the impact of training varied across different demographic groups of students. And so we looked at race and ethnicity, no change. Students in different racial and ethnic groups reported the same impact and satisfaction with the training, but we did find something interesting in gender that I thought I'd mention and see if anyone in the room wants to comment on it later. We found that female students were more positive about the training across all items and even in the qualitative analysis of their reflections, and especially in terms of their understanding the challenges faced by people with autism and their families, and in changes in their communication skills. There was a big difference between male and female students. We were surprised by this finding, honestly, and so we went to the literature and we find that there are differences in learning styles between adult learners who are male and female. And females tend to score higher on empathy measures, and it may be easier for them to pull information to learn from an encounter that's really qualitative. So we didn't tell them what the lessons were, we just told them stories or had family members talk to them about their experience, and that may be easier for female versus male students. Males tend to prefer a more traditional teaching where they have readings and we're thinking in the future we may provide some clinical guidelines and some readings to hopefully help the male students gain as much from the training as the females. We found, not surprisingly, the students who reported coming in having previous knowledge or contact with someone with autism, those students were more likely to say that they'd like to work with patients with autism in their future career in medicine. And so we found that there were positive changes in the students' reported knowledge, comfort, and competence. And our grant was coming to an end. We had just a small grant from HRSA, and we were trying to think about how to sustain these efforts and maybe expand it to other medical schools. One thing, we were able to continue the work, and Nikki's still working on this project through our LEND program. And so we have students coordinating the panels, and we're still in the medical curriculum at Ohio State. We also developed a website to try to provide resources to other faculty and other medical schools who may be interested in having an encounter with patients with disabilities. And so I'm not gonna spend time on this website, but it's autism-med-ed.osu.edu. And we have some background information about autism. We have a step-by-step guide for how, if you're interested in having patient participation, this is how you reach out to the disability community and recruit people and plan this event. We also have some materials it was kind of a pie in the sky. I hope that faculty members will take the initiative and start their own program. It's more likely that they'll come across these resources and assign them to the students. And so we have this basic information about autism and autism services. We have some videotaped vignettes, a clinical interview and a physical exam of patients with autism. We also videotaped our panels, and so they can see a conversation with parents and people with autism around healthcare issues. Finally, we did a lot of work, and Nikki was really helpful in this too, pulling together community resources in different parts of the state. So I think physicians sometimes feel overwhelmed when they have a patient with complex needs and they want to make referrals and really have no idea what's out there. You know, they don't know that things exist, not to mention how to get in touch with the things that exist to help families. And so we provided a community resource list that they can refer to. And that's all I have to say. We're really, really happy again to have this opportunity to talk to you all. Thank you.